From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm John Gatto. What would you do if you found out after some three decades of life that one of your parents was a different race? That's the situation faced by our guest in this half hour of Newsmakers. Michael Fosberg, an author and performance artist, was raised believing he was Armenian, only to find out that his father, who he didn't have a chance to connect with until his early 30s, was African American. He was recently at UW La Crosse, where he performed his one-man show, Incognito. He told Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Rysom that his life started out pretty normal.
I grew up in a working-class family north of Chicago in a little town called Waukegan, and it was a very blue-collar town. And I had a pretty normal childhood. There wasn't any tragedies or anything like that. I grew up with my mother and an adoptive. I guess I'll call him stepfather. I didn't call him stepfather. I mean, he adopted me when I was about 5 years old, and so he was my dad. And then when I was about 8, I think they had a kid, and then they had another kid when I was 9. So my brother and sister are 8 or 9 years younger than I am. And, it was just sort of a normal working class environment, north of Chicago, an industrial town.
You look on it fondly?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing for me that was odd about it, I guess, would be that I never really felt completely, I don't know if I should say accepted. I mean, they accepted me. I never felt completely a part of my family. There was always something. I mean, I looked different than my brother and sister. I looked different than, obviously, my father, because he wasn't my biological father. I looked a lot like my mother, but I never felt like I always felt a little bit like I was an outsider a little bit. I was a little kind of an oddball or, I don't know, the odd duck or whatever. But I guess that would be the only thing that I would say. But other than that, I look on it fondly, yes.
This was your outsider perspective. Did that anything of that have to do with the skin color?
Look at me. I mean, do I look? I mean, I look white, right? I mean, that's
pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, that's the whole thing about this is that all my life I grew up thinking I was a white guy, when in fact, I'm a lot more than that. I mean, that. Just the outsider feeling just came from the sense of I guess I didn't know who my biological father was, and therefore there was this sense of something missing, and I think also because I was so much older than my brother and sister, it wasn't like I could hang out with them. They hung out with each other because they were a year apart, and they're very, very close. But I'm not as close. I won't have that relationship with a brother or with a sibling because there's an age difference and it's just different.
Did you ever get any sort of comments or look in the mirror and go, hey, my skin color is just slightly different from the rest of my family? No inkling whatsoever? Because you are, but it had to be pointed out to me that, of your heritage.
Right.
But there is a slight skin color there that maybe, did anyone pick up on, or was this a total shock to you?
No, I mean, my mom's Armenian, and Armenia, for people who don't know, is considered a Middle Eastern country, although that's not what Armenians consider themselves. But it's located next to Turkey and Iran, and it's landlocked near Azerbaijan. The people of Armenia are more olive-skinned. We talked about that a lot when we were growing up, and I went to Armenian picnics, and I ate Armenian food, and it was very traditional, very much like other immigrant experiences. I mean, whether you were German or Italian or Irish and you came from the old country, you had the same similar kind of things. You had picnics and get-togethers with, your clan, so to speak. So I grew up with that, and so my skin tone, although perhaps not lily white, shall we say, was olive tone. So it wasn't anything different from the rest of my family.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio's Newsmakers. I am with Michael Sidney Fosberg. He is the star of Incognito, an autobiographical solo show about a man's search for his biological father. Fosberg was raised as a white man and discovered that his father was African American. Take us to the age of 32 and with whatever information you think we need to know, and what led you to seek out your father's identity?
Well, the event that precipitated it was the divorce of my parents. My mom and my stepfather had sort of unceremoniously announced to us, myself and my siblings, that they were getting a divorce. And I realized at the time that I didn't know anything about my biological father. And it suddenly became this whole thing of, gosh, that might have something to do with who I am and where I am in my life. I was a little bit lost in my life at the time. I was a struggling actor in Hollywood, miserable struggling actor, not making a living, doing, you know, two line roles on a little tiny TV show or whatever, you know. And so I realized it was time to really go out and take this search. And so I quizzed my mom I needed some information. And she was very crafty. She only gave me three pieces of information. She told me his name, which was John Sidney Woods. She told me that the last time she had spoken with him, which was some 25 years prior to this, that he lived in the Detroit area. And as if to pique my interest or something, she said that I had looked exactly like him. So I'm thinking, wow, okay, I want to meet someone who looks exactly like me, right? So I went out, and this was before the age of the internet when we did everything on the internet, and I went to the library and they housed phone book sections. And I went to the phone book section and looked for a Detroit phone book, found the book, looked for his name, copied down, I don't know, maybe five or six listings, went home, and petrified after an hour of trying to determine what the heck am I going to do if I find this guy and what if I don't and all these millions of questions running through my head, I called the first name on the list, and it turned out to be my father. Yeah, bingo.
Was he receptive to hear from you, since it'd been over 25 years.
Well, yes. At first he was – I mean, I think he was as shocked as I was. But I had a lot of fear about doing this because I think – I don't know if I'd heard stories on television or where I'd heard the stories. But I'd heard stories about people who had gone out and looked for their parents and then the parent didn't want anything to do with them. You know, it was as if they had buried their past and now it came rearing its ugly head. And so I kind of apologized to him and said, hey, it's okay if you don't want to talk to me. I just want to find out how you're doing, let you know I was doing all right. And he immediately said, no, son, how are you? What, you know, where are you? And we had this long conversation. And then at one point he says, you know, there's a couple of things you should know I'm sure your mother's never told you. I'm thinking, well, like what? And he says, well, first of all, I want you to know that no matter what you were told or what you thought happened, I want you to know that I've always loved you and I've thought about you a lot. So here's my father. I'm going to find my father and telling me for the first time that he's been thinking about me all this time and that he loves me. And my heart just, you know.
And you're 32.
I'm 32, right.
And a long wait.
Yeah, long wait, exactly. And then he says, you know, there's one other thing I'm sure your mother's never told you. And I said, what? And he says, I'm African American.
What went through your mind when you heard that?
I literally, my body literally sank. I felt like I was going to fall to the floor. And I remember I braced myself with my hand against my bureau, my chest of drawers, and I was holding the phone in my other hand. And I remember I was living in an apartment at the time that was about the size of, half the size of this studio. It was about the size of an elevator, okay. You know. And there was a mirror across the room, and I kind of glanced at myself in the mirror as if I had suddenly changed from white to black or something. I don't know what. And then he said, you know, your grandparents are still alive. They're almost 80. They're living in the Virginia Beach, Virginia area. And he recognized I wasn't speaking. I wasn't saying anything. And he said, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. I'm great. I'm good. You're right. She never bothered to mention that. So we continued to have some more dialogue, and I realized, and we decided to stay in touch, and we, you know, gave each other our numbers. Well, I already had his, of course, and we hung up. And I realized at that point that all my life I had felt connected to African-American people, African-American culture, all through my teen years, through my college years. I used to have – I mean, there's a picture in the book of me with a huge afro from college. And I'm not talking about as might be called a Jew-fro. I know our I know our listeners can't see this here, but you
– Very curly, very poofy.
Exactly. So I mean, I couldn't get a comb through my hair. I couldn't get a brush through my hair. I used to recite Richard Pryor routines verbatim. Here was this white guy with this huge fro walking around reciting Richard Pryor. What's wrong with this picture? I mean, a lot of people were going, what's wrong with this cat? You know, I mean, has he got some black in him or something? Or, you know, I had always felt this inside, but I couldn't explain it because my family was the only family I knew. They were a white working class family. So there wasn't anything to lead me to believe that I was anything other than what they were.
Did anything about your belief system, the way you looked at the world, did you just get stressed out, you know, when you got the news? What changed about you?
You know, I think the biggest thing that changed for me, again, because I had such a connection or felt such a connection all my life to African-American people, African-American culture, it wasn't as if I suddenly went, you know, oh my God, I'm black, I can't believe this, I reject it. It was as if, oh gosh, yes, now I understand why I feel this way. What really changed for me was that the richness of my life, there was such a deep, full richness. I now had a better understanding of who I was and what I was, and I felt much more comfortable about that. And now, of course, the thing that I do is I travel around the country from August until May. I tour the show. I do 80 shows a year. I engage audiences in dialogue after each show about race and identity and stereotypes and family secrets and all these different things that are composed in the play. I just published the book Incognito, an American Odyssey of Race and Self-Discovery. We've got a thriving website, which we have people visiting all the time, incognitotheplay.com, and there are people constantly going there and emailing me. In other words, I'm continuing and I'm trying to push the national dialogue on how we identify each other and ourselves.
Are you black? Are you white? Are you a double scoop of ice cream, one of each?
Mocha Java. Right. Well, this is a thing that I think is important to talk about because a lot of times this is what we do to each other. We force ourselves into two choices. You're either black or you're white. You're either a Republican or a Democrat. You're either a conservative or a liberal. You're either pro-life or pro-abortion. But we know that there's all kinds of things that happen in between those choices. There's a much more, many more nuances and thoughts and opinions and beliefs between all those choices. And yet we only give you two, and we force you to have these two. So what? Why do we do that? Now, in this most recent census, which was this past year, 2010. We did give people a lot more boxes to choose from. But even in the attempt to help people discover and uncover all of who they are, we kind of screwed things up. We had one of the questions, question number 8 on the census, deals with Spanish origin. They ask if the applicant filling this application out is of Spanish origin. And then there's like 5 boxes of different kinds of Spanish or Latino origin. Then the next box is, what is this person's race? Well, first of all, what's the difference between origin and race? Why should Spanish or Latino people, why are they not considered race? When I mean, in other words, the whole issue, the whole idea about race is so screwed up. It's a social construct. So, and then they have all these boxes under the race category, of which the first box is white. Well, first of all, I want to ask, why is it first? We do everything in alphabetical order. White wouldn't be first. Secondly, what does white say about us as light-skinned people? What does it say about each of us? Now, granted, some people may feel very comfortable checking the white box, and it does describe who they are. They might think of themselves as white Americans. But I can tell you, I'm sure there are plenty of people who consider themselves Irish Americans or Swedish Americans or German Americans or whatever they want. And white doesn't necessarily describe who they are. And then there's an assortment of about a dozen other boxes on there. So, again, my point is I think we've really screwed up this whole issue of race and how we have been trying to help people understand it but have sort of confused it more.
Do we need to pursue race? Do we need to use it as a category? At the rate that the population is going in the U.S., it looks like we're blending more and more as the years go by.
Very good question. And I think I'm not – a lot of people will talk about, well, we should be colorblind. Well, I don't think colorblind is the way to go because colorblind suggests that we are blind to what is in front of us, color or not. I think it's important to acknowledge what's in front of us. You saw your skin's a little bit darker, Michael. Okay, great. Let's talk about that. But to be blind to it would deny what is in front of you. So I'm not suggesting that we should be colorblind, but you're right. Why do we have such a fascination over race? And why is it not okay to talk about all of who we are? I think that's the bigger issue is let's talk about all of who we are. Let's talk about my German roots, my Swedish roots, whatever it might be. And let's also talk about if it matters to you, the kind of cultural things that you were brought up with, whether it's, you know, German food or Swedish music or whatever it might be. Those things are rich and wonderful, and those are a part of our American experience as a melting pot. But yet we've got caught up in the idea of, well, we must determine what a race is. What if it's more about just identifying who we are? What if we didn't call it a race? I don't know.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm with Michael Sidney Fosberg. He is the star of Incognito, an autobiographical solo show about a man's search for his biological father. Fosberg considered himself white until he learned his birth father was African-American. Why take your story on stage?
I tell you, I never really planned to do a one-man show. I've always had a great admiration for people who did it. I have several friends who are involved in that genre. I've been an actor my whole life. I really enjoy working with other actors. The cast parties are better. Everything about it is a lot better experience. But what happened was as I was reading some chapters for the book that I was writing, that I was working on, I first set out to write a book. And I read some chapters to a group of people one night. And they laughed and they cried and it just resonated with them so deeply. And they came up to me afterwards and they said, you should be doing this. You should be doing this. And I said, yes, I am. I'm writing the book. And they said, no, you should be performing it. And so I kind of got dragged into it. And then it took me another 10 years to finish the darn book. So here I am.
What are, in your story, what are the more poignant moments? We've certainly got a lot of humor going about the subject. Were there a more poignant side?
Meeting my grandparents for the first time, and you want to know how I met my grandmother for the first time? Well, it's in the play, it's in the book, obviously. But I got woken up at 6 a.m. in the morning by this rich black Southern voice saying, "Hey, sugar, how you doing?" You know, and that's how I got woken up, and that's how I met my grandmother for the first time. And then a week later, I get a little package at my doorstep. The return address is my grandparents' house in Virginia Beach. I open up the package. There's a tissue-wrapped object in this little tiny box. I unwrap the tissue, and it's my baby shoe. My grandmother had kept my baby shoe all these years. She kept one on her bedside table, and she sent me the other one in that package. And then there were an envelope of photographs in that package, including photographs of her holding me as a baby. I mean, just so many wonderful moments in the journey itself. And now being able to share the journey, I can't tell you how many people come up to me after the show and open up and tell me the most deeply personal stories about their own lives.
What are some of the stories? Do you come across a lot of people like you with the mixed heritage? I take it those are more and more common.
Well, I definitely hear a lot more of that now, and we're seeing a lot more of that now. The New York Times published an article a couple weeks ago about many more young people now are identifying as multiracial than ever before. So certainly that's happening more. But I get people who come up to me who don't know their parents, who are searching for them or are afraid to search for them. I get people coming up and telling me family secret stories that don't have any relationship to adoption or giving up a child or whatever, but have something to do with something completely different, because it just opened up the door for them to talk about that. I get all kinds of stories. It's, again, sometimes I feel overwhelmed by it, but then I realize that this is really, again, like I said, a conduit for them to open up. And if you had asked me to write a story as a writer that had all these universal themes in it, I'm not sure that I could have done it. It just happens to be my life story.
I'm going to throw in a little politics here, not too juicy, but
sure.
You probably heard the comment, wow, your story sounds a lot like Barack Obama. Would that be accurate?
Who?
Barack Obama.
Who?
El Presidente.
El Presidente.
The number one guy.
So many people have said that to me. I've tried to get to him. I mean, obviously, I'm from Chicago. He's from Chicago, all that, too. I've read his books. They're great. I'm a big fan. I don't know. It's political. But I don't want to talk about his politics. I want to talk about him as a person.
Yes.
And as a person, I'm a huge fan of his, leaving the politics aside.
Yep.
And the reason I'm a huge fan of his is because I find him to be a decent and in many ways – you know, we say in the black community, old school. He's very he brings back the whole idea of community, of the my favorite thing that he said is, we can disagree so long as we're not disagreeable. Who's talking like that anymore? Or let's put it this way, not only who's talking like that, who's actually putting that into practice? Because we hear a lot of politicians talk like that, but they don't put it into practice. This guy, on a daily basis, one of the knocks on him has been, he doesn't get angry. He needs to get angry. He's level-headed. He believes we can disagree without being disagreeable. Remember that? Remember when we used to do that? Remember when we used to go to lunch together, Republicans and Democrats, and we didn't think so much? You know what I mean? Not to get political again, but I just love that about the guy. And I would love for him to see the show or to read the book or to have some connection with him in some way to talk about our shared experience in a biracial world. Everybody talks about him, too, as African-American. I mean, all the media, all the press, lots of people describe him as African-American, when indeed he is biracial. And he never denies that. He doesn't deny, and as a matter of fact, he's very proud of his white heritage. Although I would say that he does identify as African-American. Is it solely because of the color of his skin? Is that the only reason we call him that? I'm not sure.
Michael Fosberg, the performing artist and author, was recently at UW La Crosse, where he performed his one-man show Incognito about his life, race, and a quest to discover his roots. He was interviewed by WPR's Steve Rysom. And for this week, that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Our production team includes Steve Rysom, Maureen McCollum, Mary Meehan Stroop, and our senior news editor and Newsmakers producer, John Davis. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, we invite you to visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau, as well as network news from Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, we'll also welcome your comments. You can find links to our producers and staff, all of that and more, at wpr.org/lacrosse.